You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Talk radio show on Up to Me Productions. Today, for some time now, we've been having this series around our power lunch hour, and I can't imagine that it gets any more powerful than it gets today. But we're going to spend a little time kind of pulling back some of the layers of the power and really get to the core of the man. I have a very special guest today, our candidate for mayor here in the city of Atlanta at a very special time in the city, Caesar Mitchell, amen. A friend, yes, a fraternity brother, yes, and right now he is the leader of our city, preparing for the next phase of life. So we're really excited to have you on the show, as hopefully this will be a breath of fresh air for you, because I've been watching you do a cajillion and one mayoral forums been all about dissecting the issues any way, shape, form, or fashion, and I'm sure you are... you know, at a point now where you've listened to and spoken on these issues ad nauseum.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit of a break from that today. And really, what I really want to focus on today, because it's clear, both based on what I know of you, but the, you know, citizens of Atlanta really don't get an opportunity to see this. And so I'm hoping this conversation can give them an opportunity to see the man behind the issues and the legislation and the stances and the strife and all of the things that you're having to do as a part of your role.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming on, Caesar.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So why don't we just kind of start? We'll keep it easy here as we go. And you know, first of all, I'll say that one of the things that I think you do a masterful job of. It's all. I mean, you know, your gifts that you bring to this awesome calling that you have are so apparent. And one of them is just around just the beautiful oratory that you have and how you express thoughts. I know that seems like it's probably something you just take for granted, right?
I'm very critical of myself.
And
I get a lot of critical feedback.
That's hysterical. Even just in having this conversation, it's almost as if you are, you know, kind of... out deep voicing me, which is not going to happen on my podcast. So you better take it up a level a little bit. Take it up again. Take it up next to my podcast, sir. No, but seriously, give us a little bit of an introduction to the man beyond some of the things that, you know, they may have had an opportunity to catch in the, you know, the various mayoral forums or any of the rallies that you have.
No.
Give us kind of a bird's eye view of the life of Caesar Mitchell.
Well, I think that's a really good question. I mean, most of the time people see me in a suit and they see me on TV or they see me, you know, somewhere out publicly, you know, in my uniform, basically.
Right.
But oftentimes they don't see me when I'm at the grocery store down the street picking up groceries at the end of the day.
They don't.
With my tie loosened and fulfilling the honey-do list.
Right. They don't see you just down the street here, which just happens to be, we're at my home in historic West End, and he lives just around the corner.
Exactly. People don't know that I live right on the block.
Right, right.
I've lived there for over 20 years,
right.
and I'm raising my family there. Well, I'm a product of this city, man. I am a son of this city. But even more specifically, I'm somebody's grandson. I'm somebody's son. I'm somebody's brother. I'm somebody's father. Three children's father.
Right.
And I'm somebody's husband. And those titles really mean a lot to me. And they really impact what I do every day in so many ways. You know, growing up in the city, you know, I had a grandmother who was very much about service, a mother who, after my dad passed, you know, as you know, became a single mom. And she was a strong mother, a strong woman. And then, of course, now being so privileged to be married to a wonderful woman who is an incredible leader and a servant in her own right. She's a public school teacher here in APS, like my mom was. And we are incredibly blessed to have three children, two daughters who are 5 and 6 years old, mm-hmm. and what I call our little October surprise, a newborn baby boy, a son, that we never expected. In fact, even when Tiffany was pregnant, I was very convinced that we were having a third girl and hadn't even thought about naming him Caesar the third. And so just incredibly fortunate to have a family unit that is really a family that is really in love with each other.
Right.
And I mean that. I mean, you know, I love my children. I love my wife. I love going home to my wife and my children. And my children love to see daddy come home. And my wife loves to see her hubby come home. And that's what fuels me every day.
Yeah.
And being able to live in a neighborhood like West End for all these years and to see, as you and I both know, you know, some of the fits and starts that we've gone through
right,
as a community.
Right.
And to
see we live through it.
Yeah, we live through it.
Right.
And we live, quite frankly, and survive to tell the story.
Right.
This community is on the rise. Last thing I'll say, you know, I did a little meet and greet. You heard it maybe
right.
Across the other way. North of Abernathy, as they say, the north part of West End. And one of our neighbors was like, well, Caesar, we didn't, a lot of folks didn't know you lived here. And I said, well, you know, I'm an old head, man. And I just really get really tickled and my heart warms when I see all the young pups
right.
running through the neighborhood,
right.
loving
right.
this neighborhood.
Right.
And it's just an example of how wonderful the neighborhood has become.
Well, what is apparent as you hear your story is the legacy that has been left in just really at the core of your DNA and all of the things that you love. And how all of that is serving a special preparation for the purpose of the work that you're called.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I come from a family of servants.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to step back and look down on my family and all the people that are around me in my life, we really are a bunch of servants. My grandmother was a public school teacher. Mother was a public school teacher. My uncle was a college educator. My
wow.
dad was an Atlanta police officer and an ordained minister. My wife is a public school teacher right here. And so we are just a family that believes, number one, in obeying the laws of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being good and faithful Christians and treating people right. And core to that is love. And the greatest way you can show love is to serve others.
Wow.
And to do it without judgment. And to do it even when your circumstances, quite
right.
frankly,
right.
might suggest that you maybe defer and wait for somebody to help you.
Right. Right.
But helping others is a way to healing too.
What I can appreciate as I hear you share that just is the authenticity in that and how it clearly is the real core of you.
Yeah.
And as you think about what that has prepared you for, and as you kind of sit at this precipice, you know what I mean, to look
yeah.
out on the horizon
yes.
and the work that is before you, that you're asking our city to give you the awesome privilege to do, you know, how would you describe that calling? Like, how would you describe that purpose?
Well, I think it's about, as you put it, an awesome opportunity to lead and serve. And not separating those two words.
Okay.
I believe that you cannot lead without a spirit of service and lead in a way that makes our city a better place, a more healthy place, a
right.
place where we learn how to live together, where while we may have different backgrounds, different ideas, even opposite ideas,
right,
opposite
right.
background, that we live in a community where those ideas can coexist and we all can coexist harmoniously. in the same space and community. Community, I like to say, is really, it's another way of saying communing together or coming together as one. That's what community really means. And so for me, it's a calling of service and service through leadership. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to do that. I've been fortunate and blessed to have had the opportunity to serve. You know, as council president, you know, I have a very defined role. It's just to conduct the meetings, preside over those meetings, you know, and appoint committee chairs and have some administrative roles over the city council. But I've used that role to do far more than that. Mm-hmm. I believe in impacting young people. And so I've had a program that I didn't stop. When I became council president, I continued that program. And it's a program focused on getting young people ready for college and career, my college prep series, which, of course, you know about.
Absolutely.
We have been supportive of.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I believe is the work we all ought to do. And so I've created a partnership, or a series of partnerships.
Right.
And I don't try to do it alone. I don't try to go it alone. And so, you know, even though my job description doesn't say Caesar Mitchell as council president must do the college prep series, I do it because it is a labor and an effort of love, service. And so that's just how I approach the awesome opportunity to be in this role. What can we do in a very entrepreneurial fashion? Mm. How can I use this role to have a greater impact beyond just what the job description?
So, and what is apparent as you share that is the things that have prepared you for this awesome responsibility. Those things are probably pretty obvious to you, but not obvious to me and not obvious to others that are thinking about what gifts do I have? What passions do I have? And what are they preparing for me to, preparing me to do? So what I'm going to invite you to do is let's take a trip back.
All
right.
All
right. And let's think about the things that as you experienced them were clear illustrations that you were being prepared for something in terms of this at the core, things you love to do in terms of passions that, you know, you saw in the early forming stages and you maybe even weren't aware at the time they were preparing you for this awesome responsibility that you have now.
Well, yeah, a lot of experience. I mean, I was fortunate as a kid to be able to play in rec sports. And so I was in football, I was the linebacker and the fullback.
Okay.
So I was a guy who most of the time had to block for others, make way for others. Maybe every now and again I got a chance to run the ball. I wasn't particularly fast or anything like that.
Right.
But then I also was like the nose guard and the running back, so I tackled people. So I had to stop you from getting a first down.
Okay.
That was my role.
Okay.
And but by and large, all the way through my youth, I was kind of like the captain of the football team. And I think that prepared me for being very calm in a role of leadership and being a listener. Being someone who was not afraid of collaborating and not afraid of taking some good ideas and putting those ideas into play, even though they are not my ideas. And so just experiences growing up in team sports. When I was a pitcher, when I was playing baseball growing up, I was a pitcher.
Okay.
And so as a pitcher, you got to, you know, throw the ball and you got to make strikes.
Right.
And one of the lessons I learned being a pitcher was that it, more than the physical act of throwing the ball, it was all about kind of a mental centeredness that allows you to throw strikes. And that is incredibly important. Get to a point where you have hand-eye coordination and this mental centeredness that allows your hand and your eye to act together in a way that you don't have to worry about the physical motion. Mm. You just have the centeredness. And
it's as mental as it is physical.
It is
not
more mental than physical throwing strikes.
Right.
And that was a very important lesson for me in terms of how you have to
make
sure you stay very focused.
Right.
And then I also think about an experience I had a little fast forward a little bit into high school. And of course, still being very much involved in sports and also ROTC. Is that sometimes you may think you might be the best to be the number one leader, but sometimes you may have to be number two or what have you. And I learned that in ROTC. And because I didn't become the battalion commander, I was a battalion adjutant, you know. And so that taught me a really important lesson, again, on being a part of the team and knowing how to be a part of the team in a productive fashion, even though you're not the point of the tip of the spear in terms of position. And then one last experience is an experience, and I talk about this a lot because for me it was very formative in this whole idea of stepping up and serving when the need is there. A lesson I learned from my grandmother. My junior year at Morehouse College, there was no yearbook. There's no college yearbook. This yearbook staff just disintegrated and no yearbook came out. And that fall, the administration produced almost something like a little Facebook, basically, a little book that was like a Facebook. And so, you know, I'm a senior. In my senior year, I've got two majors. I'm a double major. I've got two jobs. I'm a volunteer intern with Congressman John Lewis. And I also have a little part-time job that I've had that helped me pay the bills. And I also had just pledged my fraternity, the great Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. And I was, you know, a chapter officer, as a historian, and I think maybe even the KRS, or the, you know, the secretary. And I was on the hop team. So I had all these things going on. But then I happened to be in a meeting, just happenstance in a meeting with some of the SGA leadership, and they were trying to figure out who was going to actually do the yearbook. And, you know, I was thinking about, well, you know, I may volunteer to help be one of the little representatives or something, what have you. But they started talking about the fact that there was no yearbook ever. Because the yearbook staff had disintegrated.
Wow.
And no one had done anything. And so I'm sitting there thinking, dog, we got to get this done.
And can't so not have a yearbook.
Can't not have a yearbook right. My senior year. So I raised my hand and I said, I'll do it. I'll be the editor-in-chief of the yearbook.
Okay.
Had no experience in doing a yearbook. Had no idea how much time it would take to get it done. But I knew that if I pulled together a good team, if we look at the processes that you have to put in place, if we work with folks who were kind of the support team within the college administration, and we looked at how old your books were done, that we could get it done.
Yeah.
And so I put together a team with no experience, and we finished that yearbook. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is that we put in place what I would call the continuity of the organization. Mm-hmm. So when I finished the work of the yearbook in my year, the yearbook editor for the next 3 years had already been identified. And so, you know, that was my goal.
Okay.
To make sure that happened.
And that's never happened again.
And it's never happened again.
Right,
so
right.
That's just, you know, just a few experiences that have informed how I approach my service.
Well, they're very compelling, and I love how they connect to what you shared earlier, the combination of the call to serve and to lead, particularly with the football example,
yes.
Where, you know, you're in a role that, you know, if you're blocking and tackling, you know, for others, that's not the limelight, you know what I mean? But you were called to lead, and you realize that was your role to serve.
Yes.
Each of those examples has some connection to that.
Yes.
And I definitely think that shows up in the character of the man that is now called to this awesome responsibility. And so I can appreciate that. I want to shift gears a little bit. And to your credit, you're a humble man. So this might feel like a little, you know, this might feel a little uncomfortable. But what I want you to think about is share with us early indications of things that you were gifted in, things that you were better than most in, that you recognized and were able to bring those things to serve the work that you were doing.
Well, I'll say one thing is just the work ethic. I looked around and realized that I actually studied, and right. I would study hard, right. I would work at stuff,
right.
and I think that has served me well. When I was in college, every day I would get out my pad and I'll have my to-do list. And I would just make sure that I check that to-do list every day and every week. And that was how I got things done. The other thing that I realized was a gift for me was I was versatile. I was able to take to a number of things at the same time and get them all done in an effective and efficient fashion. So when I was in high school, I was not only, you know, in the Academy of Math and Science, which is the at Mays High School, which is like the, kind of where all of the smart folks
right,
went.
Right. I knew it was going to be uncomfortable. Go ahead.
Yeah, where all the smart kids went. You had to be really smart.
Right.
But I excelled. Right. I was at the top in the physics class in ninth grade. I was like one of the top two or three all the time in the class.
Wow.
But by that same token, I was a captain of the football team. I was also a Navy RO, I mean not Navy, but junior ROTC.
Right.
And I've had a pretty decent social life. And in the, like the cool social club.
Right. Right.
And so I realized then that I had this gift for being able to do a number of things well on a number of different fronts. And that really has followed me throughout life. So at Morehouse College, I was, as I mentioned, editor-in-chief of the yearbook, had two majors, double majors, so to speak, and very involved in the fraternity, had two jobs, and I was able to get it all done and graduate with honors.
Right.
Right. At the University of Georgia School of Law, I was not only, I did okay in my grades, they didn't kick me out,
right.
But I also was a mentor to a young kid, who was in high school while I was there. I was a president of the Black Law Students Association.
Okay.
I had a little job as a library assistant.
Okay.
And served on a number of search committees while I was there. I was actually also a graduate assistant. And so I did research outside of the law school during the summer and during the fall for one of the professors in sociology school. So I found myself doing a lot of things. And then add on top of that, going to the core of the law school experience, I was on a journal, the international journal,
okay.
But I was also on the moot court team, which is the most prestigious thing you can be a part of in law school when it comes to extracurricular work. And my team, we actually won a national championship in moot court advocacy. And so coming into my law practice, that same ability to do a number of things, that gift, really showed itself as I not only practiced law, but even as a lawyer, I do a lot of pro bono stuff for young families trying to have first-time home ownership, doing seminars to help them get ready for the closings, to being president of the Gate City Bar Association, while also being president of Hands on Atlanta, which is an incredible nonprofit here in the city that's focused on volunteerism, and having ultimately two jobs as a full-time practicing lawyer and also being city council member. So I think if I had any gift, and that's the gift of being able to do a number of things well in a fashion that has allowed me to be generally effective. I don't know if that's, maybe some kind of attention deficit issue, but it's really been something that's allowed me to be present on many fronts in this community, and it's been really the ride of a lifetime, an incredible blessing.
Yeah, I think I've seen that show up in the way that you connect to the wide range of people that are working on your teams, and it's almost, less more of a servant leadership than it is, a boss or somebody, kind of telling you what to do, and the way that connects. And you have a great appreciation for a wide range of gifts that are bringing, that are making themselves apparent in the work that you're doing, clearly demonstrates your appreciation and just the empathy in what it takes to be successful in this wide range of things. And I think, in some ways it kind of, brings me to another thought, which is, in your work, you probably see wins often, a wide range of wins. As you think about the things that are most motivating to you, as a former athlete and as now a servant leader in a position to watch wins happen, talk about the specific wins that feel like they most motivate you. Is it, it could be, the lives changed or impacted through something, or it could be, and it could be depth or breadth in terms of impact. It could be, the value or the growth and financial gain around something. It could be just the intellectual challenge or the ability to work through a tough problem. What are the things that seem to most motivate you?
So a couple of things, and I'll give something that goes to the heart of my law practice.
Okay.
And that is, you know, when you're in law practice, that's really, it's in most cases, kind of very controlled and designed conflict. Even if you're doing a transaction, you know, to get a deal closed,
right,
a residential or commercial real estate deal closed, some sort of financial transaction or financing transaction. And one of the things that I think I learned was how to find common ground in a win-win. Mm. And I've been able to do that in my law practice. What is when two parties are on opposite sides and it seems to be too much space between them? How do we come up with the right kind of provision or term or offer that gets people together? Mm. And that's something that I believe is a skill that I have. As a council member, a couple of my colleagues would say, you know, Caesar's a peacemaker. And I've been able to sit at tables with people and just listen, and they'd be on opposite sides, two factions in the community. Mm. I can think of a couple of specific things, and I've been able to listen very intently and then make suggestions to bring people closer together. Sometimes it just starts with the idea of getting people to listen to one another and to actually hear what someone is saying. Mm-hmm. A lesson I learned from my uncle is that what people are fussing about is not always what they're mad about. So when they start fussing, don't get distracted by the fussing. Mm. You got to listen to what they really are upset about.
That's really
and then
profound.
You start to go to that issue. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have the opportunity to find that common ground. You know, when we were having a big debate over pension reform, one of the things that we really worked hard on was finding both what I call common ground and high ground at the same time and in the same place. And so, you know, that's something we were able to accomplish with that. And I played a very important leadership role in getting that done by setting the context, the framework, and the process as council president
okay.
for us to find that common ground when you know there are very different issues out there. And so I think that's one thing. But I'll tell you, you know, what I feel like is a win feeling. You know, for 12 years I've had the College Prep Series, and I've done it for 12 years, and we've served at this point over 7,000 kids.
Wow.
And you know, for the first 4 or 5 years, we just did it. You know, we just did it because we knew it was providing a great service for kids.
And needed.
Yeah, it was needed.
Yeah.
But it really has only been, after 12 years, it's only been the last 4 or 5 years that I'd be in a grocery store and a parent, a mother, would stop me and say, "Hey, Mr. Mitchell," I'm like, "Oh, you know who I am? I know who I am." You know, "Hey, Mr. Mitchell, I just want to tell you thank you for doing your College Prep Series. Let me tell you what my son and daughter are doing right now. My son is in medical school. My daughter is about to go to grad school."
Wow.
"We came to your program that was free every semester, so they got a chance to get really prepared for the SAT or the ACT. That program helped them get to college and helped them to get where they are. I just want to tell you thank you." And they just walk off. Just walk off.
And you're there like...
And so for me, that is
wow.
an incredible win.
Yeah.
For the effort that we put into it.
Once lives are changed, yeah. families are transformed.
Exactly. And I hear that story over and over again now. But it took doing the program for, you know, all these years,
yeah.
at least 10 years before I started even not 10 years, but I guess at least at this point about 5 or 6 years before I start hearing that kind of anecdotal feedback. And so for me, it's been about those kinds of wins where you can plant a seed, water that seed, walk away, go away, and come back and just happen to pass by and see a full-blown flower or full-blown plant that's now producing fruit. That's the win that I enjoy the most.
You know, it's clear and apparent as you... at how that fuels you, even just you light up a bit just describing those lives that are impacted, those families that are transformed, and you know the seemingly just little program that you started because you felt like it was needed that's now grown to be able to have that massive of an impact on the thousands of children that are, you know, or youth that have been impacted by the program. You know, as you think about and you kind of put those gifts and those passions, those motivations in the context of the work you're doing to serve not only the city of Atlanta, but the lives and the families that live within. And you are at this major crossroads in determining how you're going to be able to do that going forward. Tell me what you most look forward to bringing from those experiences and creating more, you know, what are the new wins that you're looking, shooting for, look like? What's the, you know, what's the new scoreboard, RBIs and, you know, runs and hits?
Well, I think for me, the first big score, the big RBI or big home run is going to be setting a tone of positive leadership in this city.
And in our current climate, it is much needed. And you're applauded just for the ambition to do so.
Yes. I think right now people need to have a stronger sense that, you know, their elected leader, not in it for the kabuki theater, but their elected leaders are serious about bringing people together and getting things done in a respectful and positive fashion, and taking negativity out of the work and, you know, erring on the side of being positive, even if there's a tough situation. I think that is a tone that we've got to set in this city and in this country. And that is something that motivates me as we move towards this next level. It motivates me in a very profound way. But also getting more specific and granular, I think we are at a crossroads. We've got to make a difference in the lives of our children. We've got to make a difference in the lives of children who are struggling with poverty alongside their parents in this city. And what we can do in city government is be a good partner to our school system. That's something that is going to be right out of the gate initiative for me. And it's not going to be something that I'm going to be new at, because I've established partnerships with APS, our school system, already. We've also got to make sure that we're providing great opportunity in this city. Small business owners having access to capital, access to networking, access to technical support, so they can grow and thrive.
Right.
And so the city government is a partner versus an impediment.
Right.
And that we get out of the way when it's time to spread your wings. That's something I think we've got to create a new spirit. And for 6 years I've had my Atlanta Back to Business Initiative that connects small businesses with opportunities to network in the public space with public entities, governments, local governments. But now it's grown over 6 years into a program that gives you an opportunity to network with not only government entities for procurement opportunities, but also with private sector companies.
Right.
You know, and it's more now private sector companies than there are governmental entities. And so for me, I think the things that I'm really looking forward to is kind of this renewed spirit of positivity in our city. That the person at the top can actually also be someone who's, friendly, thin-skinned, and willing to actually be humbled and not be afraid of being wrong sometimes. But then also getting focused on our young people, getting focused on providing greater opportunities in this city.
Well, I am encouraged to see a voice of leadership that actually values that. I could not agree more emphatically that our children and youth need to see that as a new role model for service and leadership. And I thank you for joining us for this conversation today. It's been enlightening. I knew that we'd be able to, get an opportunity to get glimpses of the experiences that have brought you to this point. Thank you for sharing those with them. They're very private, and I don't take it lightly that you chose to share them with us. But thank you so much for coming on today, and I look forward to being able to celebrate with you as you are elected to new mayor. And we will have had this conversation, and I'll have known intimately how that preparation occurred. So thank you so much.
No, man, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for a new Finding Your Forte show. And we encourage you to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Have an amazing and prosperous day.
I'm ready to live this thing called life. I'm taking it one day at a time. Won't let the bad moments change my mind. I'm freeing my dreams from deep inside. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm just trying to use what I got. Over time, you'll see that I may get a little bit weak, but it don't mean that I still don't have a dream. So I say, reach up and touch the sky. It's my life. Don't wanna rush my lessons, no. I'm embracing my future, learning from my past. I'm counting all my blessings. Oh, I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm just trying to use what I got. Get a little bit weak, but it don't mean that I still don't have a dream, yeah. So I say, reach up and touch the sky and fly high. Jump up and kiss the sun, you've already won. Just look up and don't look back, you're on the right track, yeah. Wake up and free your dreams into reality. Just the sky.